Peter Gers
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Now, Professor Muhammad Abdullah, who has been on the show before, is one of Australia's most prominent and respected Muslim leaders, combining the roles of academic scholar, public intellectual, community leader, and commentator. Welcome to the show, Professor. Salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Thank you, Peter.
You've just returned from the Hajj.
I did.
Have you, your Haji, have, had you been before? You must have.
I have been many times before.
Have you? Yes.
Yes. I just returned back yesterday, in fact, from this particular Hajj, yes.
What was it like?
It's always fantastic. I mean, to be able to perform the pilgrimage with 2.5 million people from across the world, you see a rainbow of colors, of diversity, of unity in diversity. It's an opportunity for me to be grounded again, if you wish, you know, in the spiritual tradition, but also to see the common good that humanity share, despite their languages, cultural diversity, you know, backgrounds, all there to simply worship the one God.
And it does it refresh your faith?
It does personally. People often ask me, why do you go to the pilgrimage?
Or deepen it, I should
it,
say.
It both. It deepens it. It refreshes it. But also, it. I say I like to. I like a bit of scrubbing every now and then, you know. So in the the spiritual sense, perhaps,
yes.
You know. So Islam, just like, I guess, other faith traditions, has a spiritual dimension, mystical dimension. And often that may become, you know, subsumed in the material sense. So I find it quite refreshing to go and work on the inward, so to speak, more than just the outward.
And those 2.5 million Haji are all dressed in white and are all the same, aren't they?
During about 5 days or 6 days of the pilgrimage, they all the men at least, dress all in two white garments, a lower garment called izar and a lower garment called rida, and nothing else but those, a symbolism of, I guess, unity, but also equality in a sense that ultimately, we are all the servants before one master, regardless of color, diversity, etc.
What's your favorite part of it?
My favorite part is a place called Muzdalifa. Muzdalifa is when ultimately all the pilgrims sleep the night, essentially, on the ground with no means of comfort, so to speak. Above them is the sky with millions of stars, if you can see the stars, but also everybody almost there next to each other with no designated seating or places to sleep. And everybody just gets to this place called Muzdalifa, lies down or sits down, and the rich sits next to the poor, the person of whatever socioeconomic status sits to next to anybody else, and suddenly there is this leveling of everybody. I find that to be quite empowering.
You don't have to do the Hajj in Islam. It's an ideal, isn't it, of your faith?
Well, it's the fifth pillar in Islam, and it is compulsory on every man and woman if and only if they are physically and financially capable of doing so once in a lifetime. Yes, so it is compulsory, but it is for those who are physically and financially capable of doing so. And if they are, then they have to do it once in a lifetime.
The Ottoman sultans, who were the caliph, never did it.
Maybe one of them.
The one who, after he was deposed, he did it.
Right,
the
yes.
last one. But
yes.
other than that, I've always found that curious.
I'm not sure why, but they could be maybe... you know, responsibilities governing the sultanate at the time, yeah.
Where were you born, Muhammad?
Well, I'm actually born in Libya.
Yes.
My parents are Palestinians, but I grew up in Jordan, and I've been here 30 years.
So. Where in Jordan?
Amman, Jordan.
Yes, lovely city.
It's a beautiful city. It's a, yeah, it's a mixture of both worlds and civilizations, if you like, the old and the new.
Were you refugees?
My parents' parents were refugees, so they left Palestine after the occupation, 1948. And my mother and father grew up in Jordan. My father left Palestine when he was 13 or 14 years old, in fact. And my brothers and sisters were all born in Amman, Jordan. And I happened to be born in Libya because my father went to work in Libya before he had to leave again Libya and migrate to Australia in the early 70s.
Ah, it was a long time ago. Yeah.
He migrated in the early 70s when it was easier to come to Australia. So he attained his citizenship early on. Mm. And then when we were about 3-4 years old, my eldest brother and I, my father decided that we go back to Jordan, all of us, including himself, to learn the language, the culture, and so forth.
Mm. Is he devout, your father?
He wasn't until I started practicing the faith myself about 25 years ago, interestingly, in Australia.
Mm.
And he started becoming devout maybe 15 years ago. Mm. But he wasn't, you know, a nominal Muslim, so to speak.
Yes. You're very devout in your faith. Where does that come from?
I picked it up in Australia, believe it or not, post the first Gulf War. I was heavily involved in during the first Gulf War with what we called in Queensland the Gulf Action Coalition. We formed a coalition that was made up of a host of organizations, you know, Greenpeace and so many other organizations to try to essentially rally against the possible invasion of Iraq. So I was more politically motivated. Mm. I was, prior to that, also involved in the Palestinian cause. I recall going to in Queensland to the Celtic Irish clubs and talking about the Palestinian cause.
Yes.
But then, post the first Gulf War, early 1990s, I became somewhat disillusioned with the rhetoric of democracy, so to speak, and the fact and international norms and relations. And I started, as a young man who was probably 22 at the time, completing my engineering degree, I started questioning the ideals of our international foreign policy, our double-sided approach to democracy. And
in which way double-sided?
In a sense, democracy looks at its own people in a way that is positive, in a sense. But when it looks at the Middle East, for instance, it's quite negative.
Mm.
The ideals of liberal democracy, the ideals of civil liberties, the ideals of freedom, you know, are articulated and are promoted in a Western context such as Australia. But then the same is not given, so to speak, people in the Middle East are not allowed to, in a sense, articulate these or fight for those. And so despite millions of peoples rallying against the invasion of Iraq, and there were millions in the first Gulf War.
There were. And in the second Gulf War.
And these are people in the West who were saying, essentially, we don't want this war, but they weren't listened to. And now we see the consequences of these actions, so to speak, of these wars. And so as a young man, I started essentially feeling at loss, and I wanted to look for something deeper. And that's when I was attracted to the more spiritual aspect of the tradition of Islam and started learning about it, at once completing a so-called secular degree, you know, in engineering, microelectronic engineering. At the same time, wanted something deeper, and that's when I started essentially practicing the faith.
And then investigating the faith as thoroughly, an academic, as a scholar.
Thoroughly. Well, I've been investigating, researching the faith for the last 25 years, in a sense.
Do you doubt your faith?
No, I don't doubt my faith. I doubt some conclusions, perhaps, of some of the interpretations, but I don't doubt my faith. I'm very strong in my faith, and I don't see that there has to be a contradiction between being a strong believer and an Australian who's living in a so-called Western secular nation.
Why are we more faithless as a society, this Australian society? We're turning our back on faith, on the churches are closed. You're building mosques, but closing churches. We are closing churches. Why?
Well, it's a complicated discussion, but some people like to go back to the Age of Enlightenment, particularly in the Western nation, to see when there was perhaps a conflict between so-called science and religion, rationality and revelation. interestingly, in the Western, in the Islamic tradition, there has never been a violent, if you wish, conflict between science and religion, mm-hmm. or rationality and revelation. And I can talk more about that if you want. But however, in the Western tradition, when there was a very strong opposition, if you like, between rationalism and revelation or faith, mm-hmm. which led to a moving away from perhaps faith. In the Australian context, there's a host of reasons for that. We are not as, in Australia, I believe, we are not as entrenched in religion per se as, say, in Europe or in the USA, in any case.
Professor Mohammed Abdullah is my guest, director of the Centre for Islamic Thought, University of South Australia. I bless the day that the University of South Australia brought you here a couple of years ago now, Professor.
Well, yeah, it's been 12 months almost now, yeah.
It's only that long. Mm. And because you came from Queensland, I think?
I came from Queensland, that's correct. Mm. I was heading another Centre for Islamic Studies there, National Centre for Excellence for Islamic Studies, and I guess count myself lucky to be here now.
You all seem you're a very considered person, a very thoughtful man, and I've known you to be a very kind person. And I find this not uncommon of people who are devout in your faith.
Well, I guess people of faith generally seem to have what I call core values that bring the human in them. Kindness, compassion, gentleness, and so forth. And when I speak to our congregation in the mosque, I often allude to the goodness, the universal goodness that is found in people generally, whether people of faith or not. I think when people are grounded, Peter, whether they are people of faith or not, when they're grounded, when they have seen the world, when they realize the aspirations and the potentials and the sorrows and the joys of people generally, they would have to have qualities that make them kind, compassionate, and gentle. I guess in my case, no doubt faith plays a role, substantial role, and I'm sure a Christian or a Jew would say the same thing. What is the point of religion if it's only based on externalities, meaning just the acts of worship and rituals, if the core values of really being compassionate and caring and considerate are absent. The religion is, in my humble esteem, religion is empty if it is focused only on the externalities and not the inward aspects. And yeah.
Forgiveness is very important, I think, because forgiveness, in many ways, it's all. Forgiveness leads to grace and grace leads to redemption.
Well, if we are incapable of forgiving, it's interesting there is a tradition in Islam where the Prophet Muhammad said that God says, if you do not forgive, then you will not be forgiven by God himself. If you do not show mercy on the inhabitants of this earth, both animals and humans and so forth, then do not expect to be shown mercy or forgiveness. Forgiveness is at the core of faith tradition. If we don't have the capacity to forgive, then there is fundamentally something lacking in our understanding of religion. When 9/11 happened, the tragic event of 9/11, 2 weeks after that, our mosque in Brisbane, in a suburb called Karabi, was completely burned down to the grounds. In fact, it was the first mosque in the Western context to be burned down to the grounds. Eventually, they caught the arsonist, who was jailed for 7 years, and I was the spokesperson for the community at the time, and when I got a phone call from a journalist from who was in the court saying that they're going to jail him 6-7 years, I said, who? And they mentioned the name. I said, who are you talking about? They said, the person who burnt your mosque. I said, well, we said we've forgiven him. Mm. You know, and she said, are you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding you. We've forgiven, we forgot. We're not holding a grudge against this person. He committed a mistake, and we'll forgive.
That's marvelous, isn't it? Love is very important.
Well, absolutely. Love is one of the attributes of God. In Arabic is Al-Wadud. Al-Wadud means the most loving. And he is the source of all love. And love is fundamental to being human. Love is fundamental to bringing fruitful relationships. And if we are incapable of showing love, not only towards humans, but also towards animals, towards this earth that is our mother, towards everything that is on this earth, then again, there'll be something fundamentally problematic in the religious claims that we make.
What do you fear, Muhammad?
I fear, in a sense, extremism on both sides, right? Because it is prejudice, extremism, ignorance, and racism that often pitches people against each other.
Mm.
There is a saying that people fear because they don't know, and they don't know because they fear.
Mm.
And so extremism on both sides, whether religious or otherwise, I think is problematic. And it's one of our most challenging dilemmas in today's world. The tragedy is when we are unable to address these issues wisely, with level-headedness, and instead inflame some of these issues to create further problems between the general masses.
We need moderate voices, don't we? And your faith does in throughout the world, and you are one of those voices. I think you enjoy it too, don't you? You enjoy your role as a public intellectual, as a commentator.
I don't know if it's enjoyment is perhaps the right word, but I think it's a moral responsibility.
A duty.
A duty. It's a moral imperative, I think, to be able to articulate a faith that has been hijacked.
Mm.
I see it as a moral imperative,
yes,
to be able to go out there, and though seemingly I have all the appearance of a conservative Muslim, but when I speak and I address people and I speak about my faith, immediately these preconceived notions are shattered. Mm. And I love that feeling. I love the feeling of being able to stand, and I've done this many, many times, where I stand in the presence of an audience who often may, you know, lean across the table and say to their colleagues, oh, does he speak English? Or and then when I start speaking and articulating my viewpoints, it breaks down these barriers. And I have found, Peter, over the last 20 years or so, one of the greatest ways and one of the most empowering of ways of breaking down barriers, breaking down preconceived notions, and really building bridges of understanding between people is to go to people, meet them face to face, and be honest about who you are.
Yes. And you have a charisma, Muhammad. You have a charisma. It's a gift. And that's good, isn't it?
You know, if you think so, yes.
You're very modest. You're very modest. Someone's raised the question, of course, atheist, and there is a new atheism extant, because values don't necessarily come from faith.
Correct.
No. And sometimes they do, but they don't necessarily come from faith. And I think that is an important thing to say.
Well, that's true, in fact, you know. Religion must not see itself, whether Islam or otherwise, as having a monopoly over morality or values.
Mm.
And values can come from diverse sources. I guess that's why there is sometimes a conflict between so-called philosophers and religious people, where some philosophers may assume that we don't need divine revelation to be able to arrive at moral conclusions. Right, we can do that through rationalism, for example, and certainly that is possible. I guess religion, if I was to speak about Islam, it is when it comes to metaphysical reality where rationality may not be possible to comprehend, and you know, the nature of God and so forth.
Well, the mystery yes, there is a mystery, isn't there? There's always something beyond the rational.
Absolutely. I mean, how do we know what's beyond the grave? Rationality cannot tell
us. Destiny. Yes. And it is. There is this sort of magic that can't always be explained.
But also, if I may say, this idea of values and morality must not be seen as the monopoly of one religion only, Islam.
No,
quite. I always use the example. You know, the first ever asylum seekers in the history of Islam actually happened in the first year of Islam, during the time of the Prophet. When they were persecuted in Arabia, he asked them to migrate. He asked his companions to migrate and seek asylum, interestingly, in Abyssinia, Ethiopia today. And his rationale for asking his companions, who were Muslims, devout Muslims, to go to Abyssinia was that there was a just Christian king. And so in doing so, the Prophet Muhammad was able to recognize that virtues such as justice is not the monopoly of Islam or religion per se, but other faith traditions have that. And I think if we are open-minded in this regard, we will be able to see these universal values that cut across all faith traditions and no faith traditions. And if we can work on these commonalities, then I think we can become better societies.
There is much we can learn from all faiths, but there is much we can learn from Islam, always. And one of the things is that most Islamic war is defensive. And that this is very important.
That is exactly correct. Let me put it this way. Peace is the default position in Islamic jurisprudence and theology. It is, according to all scholars, peace should be the default position. War is never an objective in itself. War is seen as a means to achieving an objective, and the objective should be peace. But in most instances, certainly during the time the wars that the Prophet was involved in, they were wars of defense. That is not to say there is no possibility of offensive war. The offensive happens when there is a type of aggression or oppression, but that must be that is severely governed by strict laws of engagement.
Good.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a very fine thing. A very important thing. Now, the Parkside Pirate has said, "I don't have a single ounce of faith in my body, but I could listen to this man of great faith and wisdom for hours." You see, so that says
thank
it all,
you. Thank
Muhammad.
You.
Always a pleasure to have
thank you,
you as Professor Muhammad Abdullah, Director of the Center for Islamic Thought, University of South Australia. Enjoy speaking with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Peter. Thanks.
Thank you, Muhammad.
ABC Radio Adelaide on 891 AM, digital radio, and the ABC Radio app.